You're listening to TechNado. Welcome and thanks for joining us for another episode of TechNado. Quick reminder, TechNado is sponsored by ACI Learning, the folks behind IT Pro, and you can use that discount code TechNado30 for a discount on your IT Pro membership. You know, it's like clockwork now. It's like it's ingrained in my head.
It just hit the switch.
I'll be long gone
and
from here.
Flows
on
out
my
of
deathbed. Those will be my last words.
Yeah.
Be like, she's gonna say something.
It's the code TechNado30 for a discount.
And then all flatline.
Yeah.
It's been a good morning. It's been a good morning. I'm in a good mood. It's
you're cold.
I'm very cold.
She's got like a straight up. It's like 104 degrees in Florida
outside,
right now.
Yeah,
but it's like 4 degrees in here.
It's a freaking ice box.
Yeah,
I understand that. Like, you got to keep parts of the building cold. Like, I understand why the server room's cold.
Right.
I get that. But man, I feel like a piece of cookie dough in the fridge.
It's feast or famine in these studios. Like, if that air conditioner goes out, it becomes a swamp, and you're just pouring sweat. So. If I'm going to have to be uncomfortable one way, I'll take the cold.
Yeah. I'm glad that it's cold and not super, super hot. Plus, then I get to be grandpa for the day.
That's true.
My sweatshirt says grandpa on it. It's one of my favorites. I haven't worn it in a while. And I got Marty McFly over here to my right. So,
Ford in the Back to the Future. My son this morning was like, "What is that, Daddy?" I go, "That's the DeLorean, son.
It's
the time machine. You're going to learn about Doc Brown very soon." But
your daughter loved it, didn't she?
Oh, two of them. Both the kids, I got two daughters. They were like, "I can't wait to see Back to the Future too."
Like,
you're not quite old enough for that one yet, because there's some like more adult material in there that's more obvious. But then Back to the Future 3, you're good to go.
But you got to watch them in order.
So.
So you got to wait. Okay,
yeah,
I get that.
Yeah, got a little bit of time.
So. Almost time to bring the boy in though on the Back to the Future.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing how that goes.
He's not old enough to understand it yet.
Can't really appreciate. It's like taking like a 6-month old to Disney. Like, they can't really appreciate.
Why?
They're not going to remember it, so what's the point, you know?
You've got older kids, that makes sense.
Yeah, because they can enjoy the rides and they remember what's going on for the most part, so I get that. It's going to be a good week. I hope you guys are having a great 4th of July holiday if you are watching this on the day that it's released, and if not, I hope you had a great holiday and you didn't lose any of your fingers. Hopefully you didn't have any firework-related accidents, but if you do celebrate the 4th, happy 4th. We have some great articles that we're going to get into today. We'll start with our very favorite newest segment, Breaking News.
Hit it.
You didn't do the hand.
There it is. Yeah. I did the head. I was headbutting it.
Okay. So it's psychic energy now.
Yeah.
Telekinetic. Yeah, okay. He's gotten rid of the invisible hammer. Well, we've got this one we feel like is a little more pressing, so we'll cover this one first. A threat actor claimed a sandbox escape RCE. Zero-day Google Chrome. Daniel found this one for us. And
lots of big words in that title.
It's early. It's a good morning, but I'm still tired. So maybe we could break this down a little more. But this was just this morning, I think, that this broke, right?
Yeah. You know, on TechNado Day, we do try to see what might we miss that someone will be like, "Hey, you didn't cover such and such."
Yeah.
So we looked through some articles, and this definitely seems like a noteworthy one, is that someone is selling, supposedly, a zero-day RCE and sandbox escape for Google Chrome. And that is what we call nightmare fuel, ladies and gentlemen. Because if that is true, guess what the number one used browser in the world is right now? It's Google Chrome.
It's not Microsoft Edge?
It's not Microsoft. A Chromium-based browser. So I would be interested in seeing, does this affect all Chromium-based browsers? Or is it just Chrome?
Interesting.
That's an interesting idea, right? So you might want to switch over to Firefox for a few. Just, it never hurts to have multiple options sitting on the desk. And ultimately, that's really what's going on. If you look at the article, you can see the web and Dark Web Informer is saying 0 day for sale. The R2ALCAS is, I don't know how they say that, is allegedly selling a sandbox escape RCE in Google Chrome, affected versions 126 point such and such. On the Windows operating system, and gives those versions as well. I do like that. I think they do actually say this is a nightmare. Yeah. A sandbox escape combined with RCE in Chrome is a nightmare scenario, said Jane Doe, a cybersecurity analyst. You think that's her real name?
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's it. I think she's actually Jane Doe. There she is. Give her credit. Good old Jane Doe. If her parents did name her Jane and her last name happened to be Doe, they obviously were just trolling their own kids.
I was going to say, they hate their kid.
Or they just thought, this will be fun.
be real, because I know it's like an anonymity thing. It'd be real funny if we found out one day that there was a source that was just throwing that in there. Like, well, we need to attribute this random thing to somebody, and we don't really have an actual quote on it. We'll just throw in a Jane Doe and say, oh, she's anonymous. It's an anonymous source. We got to protect our sources, and it's not real.
I wonder how much this is running for.
Yeah.
It would seem like it would be a bit of money.
Yeah, that'd be a good question. The way you explained it was a lot easier than, I feel like the headline was not, threat actor claiming of sandbox escape RCE in 0-day Google Chrome. I feel like those words are in the wrong order.
Well, you know, listen.
That's just me.
When AI writes your titles, you got to be ready for whatever it spits
this
out.
This was breaking. They had to get this out.
Right. You got time to edit.
Sometimes the words get scrambled.
Right. You just copy paste out of ChatGPT and you go with it.
If it works, it works. You get the, what is the... SEO? You get the SEO. So it does. It doesn't
That's all
matter.
That matters.
So a little bit less pressing. This issue's been resolved, but it was a pretty big deal earlier this week. Xbox Live suffered a widespread outage. Xbox support was investigating at the time. So this was happening Tuesday of this week.
Trouble in paradise.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd call it paradise. Those Xbox Live chat rooms.
They can get pretty rough, don't they?
Yeah. You log on for 5 minutes and you leave having to go to therapy.
You just like that picture of Matthew McConaughey smoking a cigarette. Like...
Exactly.
The things I've seen and heard.
So it was unavailable for approximately 7 hours, which if you're a serious gamer, I mean, that's a big deal.
Man, I guarantee there were some people losing their ever-loving minds mm-hmm. that they couldn't get on Xbox Live, which is sad.
Affected thousands.
Touch grass.
They do. Touch Grass Simulator is available they get on the Xbox grass. Live Store.
Have you played Touch Grass 2.0? It's amazing.
Well, they said they received a peak of more than 38,000 individual outage reports around 3 p.m. On the day that this happened, which again, I think was Tuesday the 2nd. But it was resolved. Xbox said, hey, users should no longer be encountering issues. You should be good to go. But they didn't say what happened or why. So I don't know if it was just maybe there was something going on in the world of Xbox Live and just a lot of people happened to log on and overwhelmed stuff. I don't know.
You think maybe it was an accidental denial of service?
Could be. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
It's a... shitty intern.
Yeah.
Push some unauthorized code or some affected some weird configuration change. Not that that's ever happened with Microsoft before.
But no, like, obvious like security issues or anything. It was just a pretty big outage. So maybe, I hope we don't find out later that it was like, by the way.
Yeah.
So we had some problems.
There
we
was
had
a
little
breach.
There's a little threat actor. Yeah. Might
you
have
never
been
know
involved.
When those things turn into a security incident.
Hopefully not. That's, I think, going to do it for our breaking news today. If we missed anything, let us know.
I'm sure we did.
There's a lot that goes on. But we do try to pull some stuff as we're filming just so that we
right. so it's
covering.
It's on the edge. Yeah,
pertinent, you know?
Right.
Well, getting into our articles that we carefully handpicked and curated just for you. Shopping app Temu is dangerous malware spying on your texts.
Shocker.
Lawsuit claims.
Lawsuit. See, now that's burying the lead right there. The lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. That's the
coming.
Big one.
That's what's up right there. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that Temu is a piece of crap. Yeah.
If you're not familiar with Temu, you can buy basically anything. If you go to their page, they have everything from maternity clothes
have you bought
to
anything
automotive.
Off Temu?
I don't think so. I've bought off of Shein before. It's been a long time, but I did buy several shirts off Shein, and I'm still wearing them to this day. Like, they're not supposed
they
to last
very long.
They
did not disintegrate after 2 weeks.
But they have lasted me. They have lasted me.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's fast fashion, and so if you're not going to wear it for a long time, they say not to because it's not sustainable. But Temu is, it's kind of like Shein in a different font. I've never ordered off of there, but they do have quite a bit of variety in their wares. But
I like how the package looks like they were shipping human organs.
Yeah, this does look ominous, like, doesn't it?
Here's your liver.
This is a mugshot of the package. Yeah. That's what that looks like. That's very ominous lighting. But it's grown very popular. There was, if y'all watched the Super Bowl, there were like 6 or 7 Temu commercials that played during the Super Bowl. They were very much pushing in the U.S., but according to, I believe it was Grizzly Research, had a forensic investigation that they did that said that the company that supports Temu or the company behind Temu is a fraudulent company. And Temu is cleverly hidden spyware. What do you think about that, Daniel? I know your opinions on
you know,
apps like this.
Anything you have to be, if you're in the United States or any other area, honestly, especially in the United States, and you're using apps that are Chinese in origin, you should be suspect of that just because of how the CCP has their hands in every, like, that's just how that goes.
Yeah.
And apparently Temu is not, you know, immune from this. I did pull up the report that talks about what the problems were or that they think they have found within the Temu app. A lot of weird, definitely shady looking stuff going on there. If you want to jump in here, we got, it says the app has hidden functions that allow for extensive data exfiltration unbeknown to the user. This potentially gives bad actors full access to almost all the data on a customer's mobile device. It's evident that great effort was taken to intentionally hide this malicious intent and intrusiveness of the software. The parent company of this has also had another app been suspended from the Google Play Store for doing very suspicious things. And it wasn't until they removed those suspicious items that they were allowed back in. Guess what? Temu has those specific suspicious things embedded into them. Like being able to, according to this article, recompile itself, make configuration and modification changes after you install the app. And when once you give it permissions, so of course, you know, anybody that's ever downloaded an app before, you download the app, it goes,
would like
hey,
to access blank, would like to access
need
blank.
Permissions, yeah. Right? So you go, okay, yeah, here's your permissions. After you give it those permissions, it goes, you have done stupid. And now I'm going to make more changes. So it's almost acting like malware does when it goes for a second stage. And in that second stage, it does malicious things.
Yeah.
So there's a whole chart that they have available here. Let me pull that up. Here we go. Things that are dangerous, and Temu does them all. Local compiling with package compile, requesting information if app runs root rights or root privileges is how I would have put that. let's see, a request process list, request system logs, accessing debugger status, reading and writing system files to sys devices, accessing external storage, making screenshots, requesting MAC addresses, putting MAC address in JSON and sending it to an information server, code obfuscation with most Java code, unnamed files, folders, and functions, which is also a hallmark of malware.
Mm-hmm.
Android permissions to camera, permissions to write external storage, permissions to record audio, permissions to install packages, permissions to access the internet, permissions to wake on lock, and putting location information into JSON, which is the fine. Like the precise, I guess it's precise, precise location, not general location.
Mm.
It accesses that and gives the precise location of the device.
Well, that's nice.
So yeah, just that's a lovely. Lot of weird stuff going on with inside the Temu app. Now to their defense, yes, they do them all. Amazon does quite a few of these things as well. And they are the biggest, one of the bigger decriers and copiers of Temu.
That's true.
And you can see Shein actually is one of the lesser.
That's surprising.
That's good to know. And TikTok as well. So for everybody that's worried about TikTok and their Chinese connections, if you're running Temu, that's probably way more dangerous.
Prioritize.
This is the only time you're going to hear me say anything good about TikTok. So
Comparatively. Yeah.
Right. I say to the fire with both of them, but whatever, you know.
But punching a guy is not as bad as stabbing a guy.
Yeah.
So comparatively, like maybe deal with Temu before you deal with before you deal with TikTok. I thought it was interesting. It was the Arkansas Attorney General that was leveraging this lawsuit. That's not the name I expected.
And they've got a
see.
Bill in place that maybe the TikTok bill. Mm. I'm not sure, but there is an HR bill that is associated with this. It is HR. Where is it? I know it's in this article somewhere. I just saw. Oh, HR 1153. In part, the Department of the Treasury can issue a directive prohibiting U.S. persons from engaging in any transaction with any person who knowingly provides or may transfer sensitive personal data subject to U.S. jurisdiction to any foreign person subject to Chinese influence.
That
sounds like it falls underneath that right there. So
a little sus. Of course, Temu said they were surprised by the lawsuit. We categorically deny these allegations.
Right.
You feel like they're going to come out and be like, yeah, you caught us.
Yeah.
You know, you
man, busted.
That's sick. No. Guess we'll back down. Yeah. No. So
it's deny.
Of course. Until it's proven.
It wasn't me.
So we'll have to see. Of course, they've got to then prove these allegations. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But Temu is becoming more and more popular in the States. So if you do have that app downloaded on your phone, maybe consider
another interesting factoid that the report kind of brought up was that they allege that Temu is losing $30 on average per sale.
That's interesting to me.
Because they guarantee like an X amount of shipping from China.
Oh,
and that shipping is like killing them. But they don't care. Why? because the data they mine is worth more than the product they sell.
Interesting.
And that's why they don't just give a crap. They just do whatever.
Because I always thought that, like, it's, yes, they're advertised as these are high quality goods. Anybody that's buying off of Temu and Shein at this point, you probably understand. It's not going to be like Egyptian cotton, you know, like it's very cheaply made.
Somebody said that in the comments that Temu was the Wish version of Wish.
Exactly.
I was like, yeah. Nailed
but,
it.
But I guess I didn't consider it. It is pretty fast for coming from China. It gets there pretty quickly.
Right.
So I guess I didn't think about the fact that, yeah, the shipping's killing them. So, a little sus to say the very least.
Don't install the app. Just go to the website if you want to buy from Temu.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Use like Hunix or Cubes or something and they get nothing.
You're just saying words now.
Those are like privacy versions of Linux.
Oh, okay. They're
privacy focused.
See, I'm not
versions.
A Linux user, so that makes sense.
One day I'm going to switch you over. It's, by God.
It sounded like you were saying a spell like use Hunix to prevent Temu from stealing. Like, it's all just a bunch of made up words.
So, technically, all words are made up.
I know. If Shakespeare can do it, so can we. Moving on from Temu, though, yeah, if you've got the app, maybe delete it. But this next article, how MFA failures are fueling a 500% surge in ransomware losses. And Daniel, anytime I see an article like this, I'm instantly like kind of skeptical because I see like a big number like that. Like, this is how this particular thing is ruining you or da 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any merit to this headline?
So probably yes. I say probably it is. There's some, I don't know if 500% is the right number or whatever, if they're inflating those numbers. This is definitely a marketing article because it links directly to a product.
Ah,
right. And the product is Token Ring, which is this thing here. Stop phishing with ransomware and ransomware with next generation MFA, where it is a literal ring that is FIDO 2 compliant. So you
just like wear it on
I
your
guess
wrist.
You swipe your finger.
Oh, a ring like for your
legit
finger.
Legit ring for your finger.
Oh.
Yeah. Except it's got a fingerprint reader in it.
I'm so. Married to my career.
Yeah, point. it's using biometrics.
Yeah, right.
So biometrics vastly superior to obviously passwords and other token-based systems. The kind like where if you get SMS message,
right.
There's obviously flaws in that. Even when you use something like an authenticator app, if someone is able to get you to go to a credential harvesting or MFA harvesting site that looks like the legitimate site to enter your MFA code here, and that's actually going to the attacker. So there are absolutely problems with password and even some MFA systems. Mm. The most secure thing you can do is to use something like a YubiKey
sure.
or FIDO-based compliant device. The problem that comes with that, and I think that that's what they're trying to solve with this ring system that they've got going on here, is what if I forget my YubiKey at home, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you're supposed to keep it on your key ring, and that's probably the best solution, honestly. And they have YubiKeys and other, like Titan Key and whatever, that have fingerprint readers and everything. So you're involving biometrics. There's also the biometrics of like facial recognition and that kind of stuff. I think it's an interesting solution, but I thought the more interesting conversation was, what would you use it? Would you out there be willing to put a ring on every day?
Yeah.
For your...
Because if I'm forgetting my YubiKey, I mean, maybe it's because like you wear a wedding ring. I'm not married, so yeah. I don't wear... Maybe if you keep it by your... Like if you already wear a ring every day and you just keep it near the ring you already put on every day and you're used to that, maybe it's easier.
I mean, I don't want to look like a, you know...
wear it like it's a class
ring. Like a New York mafia...
Put it on your pinky.
Six rings on.
Put it on your pinky, like yeah. Robert De Niro.
Oh, yeah, that's my FIDO too. You know what I mean? Like, oh, hey, Joey, you got that FIDO ring on?
But like, if I'm already used to doing it, maybe it's not as difficult. If I wear a ring, it's for like fashion purposes. I wear it as an accessory,
right.
And I still forget. Like, I'll be like, oh, I forgot to put on earrings today. I forgot. So I think for somebody like me, I'd be just as likely to forget something like this. I don't know that it really solves that problem. Maybe it's harder to lose, but if you're keeping your YubiKey on your key ring, then I think it would be unlikely that you'd lose that.
So I can see where people are like, well, if it's connected to your keys and you got this, you know, you look like a high school janitor next to your computer where you get your whole key
keep
ring.
It on a lanyard.
Kind of plugging, yeah. Zip, kind of thing going on. I get that, which is why I kind of get creative with the things that I want to be able to quickly detach from my keyring. I have quick detachers
yeah.
for all those devices.
I'd be interested to see what
I don't think
looks.
I would wear a ring, honestly.
Yeah.
Even though I wear a ring, if I wasn't married, I would not wear a ring.
I want to know what this looks like on. I want to know if it looks stupid and bulky when you
right?
put it on.
It does look pretty chunky, right?
Because it shows the ring by itself, but it doesn't show it on a person.
Yeah.
So I wonder.
I mean, you kind of got some. I mean, that's pretty wide.
Yeah.
I this looks very like a slug, like a metal slug.
And even in the demo video, it shows him like using the ring to do the MFA stuff, but it doesn't show him wearing it. I know at this point it's security.
Yeah.
But at the point.
And good for them for trying to come up with a creative solution to the problem. I'm not dissing Token Ring here. It's just not something that I think I would use personally.
Yeah. It's a good idea in theory.
Right.
I think it's a novel idea.
It's definitely a novel idea. I guarantee there's a market of people that will, and that's cool. Go for them. Like, I got nothing against that. It's just, I figure if I was going to go with something like this, I would just get a Titan key or a Fido or a Yubi key or something and just do that.
The convenience factor, I think, is about the same for either of those things, but still interesting. And the fact that, you know, MFA or the lack of MFA, I guess, if MFA is not implemented properly, or I could see how that could cause the problem that it's saying that it causes.
I think that they're absolutely right. Cause in the article they talk about how, the number one way in which companies get breached is through phishing.
Yeah.
Through cred stealing.
Yeah.
And even with MFA, that can still work quite often because of, you know, typo squatting and fake sites and stuff where you go, oh yeah, push that 2FA code right here.
Right.
And they can then grab that and bypass and you're none the wiser.
Yeah.
Right. So having that hardware-based tokenization is definitely the better way to go. Whether or not I think it should be in a ring form factor, maybe necklaces is it, or a hat.
Who was the movie star that wore like the vial, the blood? Was it Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton?
Oh, yes. I do believe they did.
She's going to invest in this ring.
Oh, she's into
like biometric jewelry already.
Yeah.
She's got the DNA
she's
already.
Biometric.
She's got,
blood. See, that's the biometric.
This
she
is
pours
be...
one drop. It's it's like that. What was it? Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, the movie. He had a cross that was also a vial, and inside of it was the blood of Christ. And then he could use that. He could put some blood on a doorway or a windowsill and it would
protect it.
It would protect it from demons and from it was very entertaining. I used to love Tales from the Crypt. It was a very entertaining series.
It feels like it should be a scene out of Salem's Lot or something. That's
right. Well, it was obviously
probably it would even scare me now.
The
so
name
I'll,
of
I'll
the movie
it.
Is Demon Knight.
Yes. Okay. I'll stay away from that one. I will not add that one to my list because
I think you would enjoy it actually.
You think so?
Yeah. It's not like scary.
Okay.
It's more entertaining with monsters.
Oh, okay. I guess if it's older, then maybe, yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I will then. It's gonna be towards the bottom of the list.
Jada
though.
Pinkett Smith. Was Jada Pinkett Smith. She was just Jada Pinkett at the time.
Yeah.
Bunch of stars. William Sadler was in that. It was a very entertaining flick. I usually watch it around Halloween time.
It was Jada Pinkett before her entanglement.
Yeah.
Before all her issues.
Before, man, did that shit hit the fan.
Anyway, we'll move on. I won't rag on poor Jada too much.
Going
back to you know, we just talked about a lawsuit a little bit ago, and we're not done talking about lawsuits today. We mentioned last week Nintendo gets a little litigious sometimes, which is probably an understatement. Nintendo,
is it a day that ends in Y?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nintendo is now suing two Switch hardware and software modders. Modded Hardware Store and Archbox are being targeted for aiding in the use of pirated games. So one of these websites, the Modded Hardware website, is actually still up and active. So they haven't been, it's not like, it wasn't an immediate, like, take everything down, but they are suing. And one of these guys, I think, is just like a subreddit mod or a Reddit mod. But he will post like tips on how to, I'm not paying $50 for a game. Here's how you can get it for free. And
yeah,
so you're kinda,
that's sketchy.
You're kind of like, you dug yourself a hole there.
Yeah. I mean, when you are just outright talking about here's how to steal things.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't blame Nintendo for that one. How can you, honestly? Right. And these are hardware modules that allow you to basically rip games or something or use them as a,
so the guy that runs
proxy to...
the guy that runs the Modded Hardware website, one of the people that's being sued, it mainly they ship Nintendo consoles that have already been hacked to run pirated games, or you can pay to send in your console,
get it modded,
and they'll do it for you, or they'll send you the stuff to do it and you do it yourself if you have the know-how to do that. But yeah, the website's still up. Get a modded Nintendo Switch today. I'm not advertising this. This is, I'm not telling you to go buy
this
website.
That's an interesting legal argument, though, because, and of course, not, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I am not a legal scholar. Do not take legal advice from me at all. But just thinking out of the box here, this is the first time I've actually read this article. I didn't read it other than and to skim it. Mm-hmm. If they're making a product, even if its sole purpose is for something illegal, I mean, if they advertise it as such,
yeah,
it's like it has no other purpose in life other than to do something illegal, or the service we provide is only illegal, I think there are laws against that.
Yeah.
So you dug your own grave on that one, man. You can't advertise. Mm-hmm. That's like saying you can, I can, you know, make drugs for you, you know, or something like that. No.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's how that works.
You can't get mad when somebody then comes after you like, hey, you can't do that.
Right.
That is an illegal thing.
Well, like, I feel like this would be a dark web kind of service.
Yeah, you would think.
Right.
But no, it's just, it's out in the open. Yeah. Right. It's very, and I
come
guess.
Come at me, bro.
Like one of the products that they have is called a MIG switch. And yeah, it's, you can back up your Nintendo consoles, your games, all Nintendo Switch consoles, apparently.
I think no installation. That's legit, though.
Well, yeah, could be. It says they're all sold out. So apparently this guy's pretty popular.
Well, like,
but
have you ever had a game die on you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
And it cost you money, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have a backup of that game.
Right. But okay, so like when I back up, if I back up a DVD, in theory, if I take a DVD that I own and I back it up.
Yeah.
And like if it's on like a Plex server or whatever.
Right.
I bought the DVD, I own it. But by backing it up, am I then doing something wrong or illegal?
As far as the DMCA goes, right, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, mm-hmm, it says that you are allowed to make backups of media that you own.
Right.
It further says that you are not allowed to break the encryption on the device. So there's just like this catch-22 system that goes on inside of it. You would literally have to be caught red-handed in the middle of breaking the encryption to back it up.
Yeah.
Or the FBI to go, ah, Sophia, you're going to jail. Busted.
They probably have better things to do.
Than try to catch you for backing up your DVDs. They're not going after people like that. They're going after those folks that are like ripping movies and then distributing them online.
Okay.
Okay.
Bigger targets.
That's it. Yeah. Right. They're big targets. They want to get the mass people. As far as this goes, again, if you had a game and you spent a good amount of money on it and you were like, hey, I just want to make a backup copy in case this thing goes dead on me.
No.
The only reason Nintendo cares is because they want you to buy another copy of the game.
Yeah.
Right. This has been historically, when VCRs and Betamax came out, the movie companies, the movie like Universal, Warner Brothers, all of them, they sued the manufacturers of VCR saying people will make copies of our movies and they won't buy them anymore.
Yeah.
Guess, you know what ended up happening? They sold more movies and videotapes and everything like that. It became a massive market and rentals. They got all this licensing money. Do you know how much it costs for a video rental store to be able to license to rent movies out? It was really expensive. Like one movie was like $100. This was in the '80s. Like that was massive.
Yeah.
So there was this big outlay of money for those companies to be able to rent them to people.
Yeah.
And it made them tons of money. So it ended up backfiring on them. So I can only imagine that this would follow suit, but if you were advertising saying steal from Nintendo, you're done.
And yeah, I think that's the main thing. I think you're right. I don't know that the MIG switch is the big ticket item here. I think they also, it wasn't just modded switches. They had like modded 3DSs that they were selling on this website.
Soft modded or hardware mods?
Modded new Nintendo 3DS XL modded with homebrew, CFW, Luma, H-Shop.
That's soft
condition.
Modding. I homebrewed my Wii.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Would you say that again into the mic so that we can call Nintendo?
So it's not illegal to homebrew your Wii. Or your 3DS, just don't like it.
Yeah, those aren't even being made anymore. So here's
why, because it's just a software mod. Mm. Yeah, I'm not changing any of the hardware. Yeah. Right, I can wipe that out fairly easily.
Yeah, well, I mean, this particular the website's Modded Hardware. Nintendo actually reached out to this guy, the operator's name, Ryan Daly, and warned him in March and said, you better close your business, which is odd for Nintendo, I think. I don't think that's something they usually do.
Yeah.
But he kept going. He was like, nah, and kept running his business. And so now Nintendo is suing, seeking damages, accusing him of trafficking hacked hardware, implying he sold products preloaded with pirated games. But the site's still online.
I mean, if he did that, then that's straight up illegal. You cannot do that. And Nintendo should go after him for that.
Yeah.
And they should win.
Well, it's like we were talking about last week, the Switch emulator that got taken down. It was like, well, there can be an argument made as to why Nintendo wouldn't want that online, because if it's current Switch games, then you could argue that, oh, Nintendo's, you know, it's taking money from Nintendo. But the 3DS emulator, it was like, well, you're not making those games anymore. You're not selling anything for the DS anymore. Why does it matter if the emulator's still
online? And I know in the Nintendo, like the Switch store or whatever, they do sell retro games or access to retro games, but it's never the full library, and it can be hit or miss. Like, things are available and then they're not.
Okay, yeah.
At least from what I understand. I don't have a Switch and I don't...
I think you're right.
From what I understand, that's kind of how it goes. So there's never like a guarantee that the game you're looking for or whatever, or the game you own, is going to be available for your Switch. So if I've got a 3DS and I've got it soft modded with Homebrew, what's wrong with me playing all my like GBA games on one style? Like, I just don't see the problem.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think there's an argument for that. But yeah, it's this guy. And then there was, like I said, the Reddit mod that was openly on Reddit, you know, hey, I'll help you. I'm not paying $50 for a game. Yeah. They're both being sued. Not a lot of details on for how much, on any kind of like numerical figures.
Yeah.
People think maybe in the millions. So we'll have to see how that develops going forward. We're going to move into we'll move away from the gaming for now. We're going to move into another segment.
We do love it.
We do love it. It's quite fun to talk about. But this is also going to be hopefully pretty fun to talk about. It's an old favorite segment called Behind Bars.
Break the law and you'll go to jail.
If you break the law, you'll go to jail.
Nobody knows the trouble I've seen.
What?
Yeah.
What was that? Oh, was that like you running a cup across the bars?
Yeah, across the bars.
I thought you were just doing a little dance.
My little clink, 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 clink.
I thought you were just getting down over there in your chair. And so an Australian man was charged for evil twin Wi-Fi attacks on domestic flights. Aussie man. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Hackadile Dundee or whatever.
Hackadile Dundee.
He's been charged carrying out evil twin Wi-Fi attacks during a flight. So not even just like in the airport, on a flight. I have to give him credit. It's at least innovative, I think.
I mean, he's got cojones to do it on a flight. And so when I was reading this article, I'm like, how did they know
that he was doing this? Yeah, what took him off?
There's not many open Wi-Fi
at
30,000 feet.
Yeah.
So they were like, what the hell is that? Somebody wanted like the stewards or whatever saw it. Like,
that's not
what
ours.
Is this weird Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
And they started investigating what was going on, and they realized this dude was basically, I think that they kind of, obviously they knew what flight it was on.
Right.
And they wrangled him, and they opened his luggage, and there's an access point, a laptop, and all the stuff he needed to perform this attack. And they're like, what's that you got there?
No. It's my emotional support router.
Yeah,
I just take it with me on flights.
But so obviously this was a weirdly unsophisticated yet sophisticated attack.
Yeah.
Because what a great, like, to have people in the air thinking, oh, there's a free open Wi-Fi.
Right.
Right. That's where the sophistication comes in. That was smart for an attacker to find an untapped market and to be able to like spend the money to get on the plane. He was doing all, you know, obviously within Australia, he wasn't flying to foreign lands and meeting exotic people.
That might complicate things
and
for hacking him a little
them.
Bit.
Yeah. He was going for in-nation flights, but giving them, you know, like fake pages and things like that so they would put in their credentials.
Yeah.
I think it was like a fake captive portal. And one of the things that they mentioned in the article, which was good advice, if you're ever confronted with open Wi-Fi, a public Wi-Fi that is open, and it asks you to put in your credentials for something, that's suspect.
Because then it's not open.
Right. That's not how that works.
Yeah.
Right. And now captive portals tend to look, kind of feel that way, but a lot of times it's not. It's just, you know, if you are on the right thing, tell me your flight number.
Right. To make sure that you're not like just camping out or whatever. Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So it just takes a little bit of thinking. Don't be so quick to just go, oh yeah, cool. Open Wi-Fi. Yo, my flight number. It's not going to give you a place. Oh, my username and password.
Right.
Is this, that is a mistake.
I think at the most, like places like Starbucks and Panera and stuff, if you're trying to log in, it'll have you like check a box to say like, confirm you want to use Starbucks' Wi-Fi to make sure you're not just camping out. Or, hey, enter your email. And then they send you like marketing emails. I've never been asked to enter a password. I've never been asked to enter like super personal or like log in through a social media account. But you're right. As a passenger, it might not immediately be a red flag. If you're just thinking, I'm looking for the in-flight Wi-Fi. There it is. And you don't think to check. But as a stewardess or somebody that's used to flying on that plane, then you probably, it would be a little bit more of a red flag to you.
But now, homeboy that did this, he's getting ready to learn the old axiom of if you F around, you are eventually going to find out because he is staring down the barrel of a maximum of 23 years in prison.
Jeez.
Charged with unauthorized access of or modification of restricted data, dishonesty, obtaining or dealing in personal financial information, and possessing and possession of identification information. So, they don't like it when you hack people. That's why it's illegal. And that's why you're looking at a 23-year stint in the old pokey there, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
hope good. It was worth it.
He did the crime. He will probably do most sometime. Most
likely, yeah.
He will most likely do sometime.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a plea deal involved.
Yeah, maybe it won't be the full 23 years. Yeah. That's the maximum. But, yeah.
But I mean, you never know. Sometimes a judge goes, you know what? We need to make an example.
Yeah. The judge is having a bad day.
Yeah.
He's like, the ice cream machine at McDonald's was broken at lunch. Yeah. And
I was on that flight. And I noticed that my funds diminished greatly.
Well,
I guess he would have to recuse himself from that.
Yeah, that's true. He could lie.
He could lie. Good.
This next one is, I feel like I have some opinions on this. So I don't know. I know we're reaching the halfway point here.
Yeah.
Do you think we should break and come back to this after the break? Or you think we should do this and then hit the break?
Let's do this because it's not a lot. Yeah, we can hit this and have a little fun.
I do have some opinions. So
4 or 5 minutes to rant on this.
To babble about this. I don't know if y'all are planning on watching the Summer Olympics. I probably won't, I'll be honest. But you may have heard of Al Michaels. He's the guy that made the Do You Believe in Miracles? That guy.
Yeah.
He was let go, or his position was removed, I guess, from NBC last year. He was still doing calls for football
blatant
for NBC.
Ageism.
And it was, people think it was because of his age.
Yeah.
They didn't come out and say that. But up until last fall, he was still calling football for NBC.
Yeah.
There's going to be an AI-generated Al Michaels to provide daily recaps during the 2024 Summer Olympics. I don't like this. So this guy listened to it. Initially, he was skeptical and then listened to it and was like, wow, that's crazy. It's maybe like 2% error, margin, but it sounds just like me.
It tastes real bad, doesn't it?
I'm just thinking like, I feel like if he's still alive and kicking and has been calling football since last year, why not just get him to do it? But the argument, I guess, is that this can be super specific to the point where like you're listening to it on the app or watching on the app and it'll be customized to you.
What?
Which like who needs that? Who's asking for that?
Zero people.
I don't need
a customized color commentary.
Right. That's not, it just
AI
takes away,
like,
I don't know. It takes away from the fun and whimsy of calling sports that way.
While that is doable and maybe there is a market out there for that.
Yeah.
That's not my biggest concern. My biggest concern with this is, do I own the sound of my own voice?
Right. Exactly.
Right. Does Al Michaels, who has made a living off of his voice and the way he speaks and how he delivers commentary, does he own that? Or can they create an AI representation of that and then go, what do we need Al Michaels for? And this honestly is why there have been a lot of writers, artists that have been highly vocal and protesting the use of AI for creating artistic works, because you basically, everybody's talking about, AI, take our jobs. These people are on the forefront of whether or not a job is getting taken.
Yeah.
Right. Because it is pretty easy to create an AI generated image that is very useful. I mean, tell me that just about 90% of the articles that you read now are not AI generated images.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Almost always.
Almost always.
And it's pretty obvious.
Unless it's an actual like still
Like a picture of a Temu package.
Yeah, that absolutely occurred. It is now mostly AI generated images. So all those artists that were out there creating images for news articles and sites and things of that nature and getting paid per download and use.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about that. It's just AI to do it. You're fired.
I wanted to see his opinion on it. If he was like, I'm not okay with this.
Did he say anything?
The only thing that I could find in this article on it was that he was initially skeptical. Like, okay, you're going to AI recreate me and it's not going to. And then when he heard it, he was like, wow.
Holy
he was
crap.
Astonished. And wow, that's crazy. Sounds almost just like me. But no indication of whether he was like, that's some BS, don't do that. Or whether he was fully in support of it. But I honestly don't know that that's extremely relevant to like going forward. Whether or not he's okay with it. Because he could be like, I think this is great. I'm okay with it. But for other people.
Right. It's not the question of whether or not. What they should do is make a legal system that allows you to opt in or opt out.
Right.
Of that. I own the rights to any likeness of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My voice, my person. And therefore, if I wanted to license you to use the likeness of me, then I get to make money and you get to make money.
Right.
And I'll have to do the work and you guys can AI it all day long. I feel like that would be the best system because then everybody kind of wins on that. For the 4 seconds, I just thought through that.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure there's somebody out there that's deep in the weeds on AI and law. And well, Daniel, you're not.
Yeah, they're gearing
about,
up to.
Yeah. They got the keyboard ready. They got their template to copy and paste into the comment section. Actually, Daniel.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. Unless it's constructive and helpful, please.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let
just
us know.
Don't be, just don't call him names, you know? That's all we're asking.
I think I've already said I'm not a legal scholar.
Not, that goes for both of us.
It just seems like common sense. That,
yeah. Gut feeling.
Like I am me and I own me and I own anything about me.
I think even for... Like, obviously, Al Michaels is a huge name in sports and everything. Like, he's super famous for a reason. But even just on a smaller scale, people that are doing, like, commentary at the local level or people that are just, like, voice actors.
Right.
Usually, you would put, like, a sample of your voice online. Like, hey, here's what I can do. And then people hire you. They say, here's my script. Can you read a sample of it? You read the sample. And then if they like your voice, then you're not worried about them stealing the whole project.
Right.
But at this point, I could read a sentence of a long script that they have, and then for all I know, they can then take my voice and we like her voice, we'll just use it.
You just kind of opened another can of worms, though, here, because let's say you create a voice to do voice acting. Mm. Let's say you're, Harry Schrar or Hank Azaria.
Okay.
Right? Who do voices for The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Cartwright.
Right.
Well, she created the voice for Bart Simpson.
Yeah.
Does she own that? Or does Fox own that? Does the Simpsons franchise own the voice to Bart Simpson that comes out of Nancy Cartwright's head? Or can she go off and use that voice in other contexts to make money? Does she own that? That's an interesting.
Well, and it's the kind of thing where, like, if that did happen, if somebody stole my voice off of, like, Voice123 or one of these voiceover websites, I probably would never know. I would just assume I never heard back from them. They didn't hire me for the project, and I would move on.
But once you move into someone that's...
That's got some notoriety,
like
some fame.
Like Al Michaels, right? People know his voice.
Mm-hmm.
That voice is very distinctive, and he has made a career off of that voice. And the companies that he has worked for have made a lot of money off. It's weird because it moves from him giving commentary and that being a part of the product to people wanting to watch their product because of him.
Right.
Right? Mm. It's when you make that shift, which is why we need to, in contracts, start to preface and pregame, hey, listen, if I ever become so big that people are watching your stuff or listening to your stuff because of me, we need to renegotiate.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a set renegotiation with metrics that...
There's contracts where it's like, oh, we technically own your likeness or whatever, and we can use it for whatever we want. And I guess in this context, that would include your voice, right?
Because I mean, isn't that how it works with if, let's say I wanted to run a commercial for, deodorant.
Right.
And I used a celebrity, right? So I own that piece of content as the creator, but I can't then just take that and go, we'll make deepfakes.
Right.
And use that slope. You can't do that.
Sure. There's guidelines.
And if you can, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah. That's outside the scope.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Of what the person agreed to.
We had a very specific agreement on what you could use my likeness for and my person. And this was outside of that context. Exactly.
this is the kind of stuff that makes me not like the advancements in artificial intelligence.
Yeah. AI gets scary.
Even there's always going to be a group of people. There's always going to be people that use it for stuff where it's like, now why'd you have to do that? You're ruining it. You're making it like you're making things. The water's muddy now. But yeah, this is something that they're going to go forward and do. This is the plan. They're going to use this AI generated on Michaels to provide daily recaps. I wouldn't be watching the Olympics anyway. So it's not like I can say I'm boycotting because I don't want to hear this AI crap. I wouldn't be watching anyway. But something interesting to know, if you think you hear the voice of beloved commentator Al Michaels during these recaps, you don't. It's not him. It's a robot.
It's not him.
It's not him. I'm saying it right now. It's not him. That's my opinion. That's I'm sticking right. to it.
I don't want the Timu Al Michaels.
No, I want the real guy.
I want the original article.
I don't care if he's 100 years old.
That's
Put
right.
him in front of
as long
a mic.
As he's got breath in his voice.
That's the only commentator I want to hear.
That's it.
We will. I'm heated now, so we'll go ahead and take a break. But don't
Let
worry.
You calm down.
I got to chill out, and I'll get one of those monsters too.
There you go.
That'd probably have the opposite effect, actually. So I'll just calm down, chill out, drink some water. We'll be back though in just a little bit with more Technado.
Tired of trying to schedule your team's time around in-person learning? Isn't it a bummer to spend thousands of dollars on travel for professional development? What if we said you can save money and time and still provide your team with the best training possible? The answer to your woes is live online training from ACI Learning. With live online training, we provide our top in-person courses in private, online, instructor-led formats. You get to provide professional development in a manner that fits today's expectations. Entertaining, convenient, and effective. Our exam-aligned courses inspire the full potential of your team. Visit virtual instructor-led training at ACI Learning for more info.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. We had a lovely, riveting, calming conversation. I have regained...
Very many a sundry things.
Very many a. Not many a. That's going to be our new word. Many a sundry things.
I was
going to
say many and sundry.
It's close. It's close enough. But yeah, I've regulated. I've calmed down. So we can jump back into our news now. Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Leave a comment. Let us know what you like, what you didn't like, and what you want to see in the future. We're going to jump into this next article. Literally jump because Grasshopper,
I see what you did there.
Grasshopper hackers mimic as penetration testing service to deploy malware. Now, Grasshopper, I've never, is this like a service or is Grasshopper like a term, like a
so
type of hacker?
I think they are saying it's like an APT.
Oh, okay. That's like the name.
I hadn't heard of them either.
Yeah.
But I saw this article and it was making its rounds on like, it was like Security Weekly, I got it on GB Hackers. I think it's on Hacker News. There was quite a few outlets that I saw this article pop up and I thought, and honestly, if you read it, it's not really crazy. It's just talking about how they found WordPress sites that looked like they were very specifically pointed toward Israeli government systems to look and mimic Israeli government systems. And once you kind of go through that, you end up getting malware downloaded. I think it was like a drive-by download or something. And, you know, they talked about using off-the-shelf, publicly available, open-source security hardware, or not hardware, but gear.
Yeah.
Like Donut and I think Sliver, was it Sliver or Havoc, one of the two? And just a bunch of off-the-shelf things that you could cobble together to basically deliver malware and have command and control over a target. It seems like there's some, this is where the article got interesting. It seems like there was some ambiguity on whether or not this was actually set up by pen testers to pen test. So was this an authorized thing?
In which case it's not malicious because it was authorized.
Right. If it was a pen testing service or organization that had been hired by the Israeli government to pen test their systems, this would be legitimate, like a red team operation. Right. But it could also be the fact that this is hackers that are mimicking a pen test operation using all the same types of things. And that's what I thought was interesting about this article is that if hackers are utilizing the same kind of TTPs as a pen test organization would be doing, it could potentially fly under the radar.
Yeah.
As, oh no, we're legitimate. And people thinking, oh, if I stumbled onto something, oh, that's just part of the pen test.
Right.
Right. That's what I thought was kind of interesting about this article.
Like a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like you're going to make it look like it's a pen test, but this is not fake.
Yeah. And if they're able to do that effectively, that makes them even more dangerous as attackers because now I got to really figure out how, or, and how do I do that? Figure out whether or not this is an authorized pen test. And you got to run it up the chain of command. You got to figure out, hey, I think I found something, then that goes to the next person in line, goes to the next person in line. Because pen tests, especially red teaming activities, are not typically known by the defensive teams.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're engaged in a red team. Sometimes they're in the dark and they just want to see how well does the blue team respond to the red team's activities. How long did it take? What were they able to detect? What were they able to not detect? And the red team's kind of modus operandi is to act as a true APT, threat modeling as actual APT. So the line gets really blurry. It could be really difficult for an organization to figure out whether or not this was a red team operation or whether it was an actual threat actor.
Yeah.
That is utilizing the same types of and tools and procedures that a red team would be using.
It's like you've got the ski mask on. Like you're very clearly doing something
wrong.
You're
wearing an APT uniform. Yeah.
Like you're hiding in plain sight almost. Like right. Nobody's thinking anything of it.
How do I? It's the Spider-Man meme, right? Yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to be here.
Right? No, I'm supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be here. Yeah. Right. No.
And then they just, probably just end up, okay, it's probably fine and leave it alone. I tried looking for, I was able to find a couple other articles where they talked about this, but when I first looked up Grasshopper hackers and went to like the news tab on Google, the first thing to come up was when WikiLeaks revealed, I guess it was a CIA tool that they used called Grasshopper.
Gotcha.
So I saw that, I was like, the CIA, it's not, it's a different thing.
Gotcha.
So if you did what I did, don't do that. It's a different thing. But it'll be interesting to see. I looked at like the chain of events, or like it kind of walked through a little bit of the process.
Yeah. It's a drive-by download, right?
Yeah, I think so. Donut's always going to be funny to me. I just think it's a fun name.
Yeah. So Donut creates obfuscated shellcode.
Okay.
Right. And then they had a NIM-based shellcode runner. And which I think grabs the next stage, which is going to be for Sliver.
Yeah.
Sliver is a C2 command and control framework. But it's open source. It's all these things are available online. You just go download them.
So it's still not 100% clear whether this is actually a
correct.
Pen test. So we don't even know. Okay.
Yeah, so some investigation is going to have to take place and whether or not this is a malicious actor or an actual pen test that is happening.
So the ideal outcome is that this is a pen test and it was a false alarm.
I don't know.
Like that's the news that we hear back. That
hopefully
would be the ideal.
That's what we hear back.
That's the ideal outcome. That just kidding, false alarm. We thought it was a threat. Yeah. It's not. They're supposed to be here. They're doing their thing.
Otherwise, they're going to go, oh no.
Yeah. The implications of that. I do not like that.
I just thought that was interesting. Like
that is interesting.
If it is a threat actor and they're using those techniques to kind of blend in.
Yeah.
Even more, man. That changes the game a bit.
Should have called themselves Chameleon. That would have been a better.
I don't think they get the name themselves.
No.
Yeah. That gets kind of done by.
I've talked about that before, where I think it's stupid that we give them cool names. Because
Komodo Dragon.
Yeah, why would you give it? That's like, I am a Komodo Dragon. Like, why? No, call him Diaper Boy, and maybe they won't do what they're doing.
That's right.
But whatever, what do I know? Anyway, well, I'm getting angry today. We'll move on. We actually have another segment. This is Who Got Pwned? Where's Cartman?
Where is he?
Well, I mean, that's not Cartman, but it's Cartman's voice, right?
Yeah.
Saying, okay, that's what I thought. So this is a company that I was not familiar with when I first saw it, but it's a company called Kadokawa Group, I believe.
Kadokawa.
But it's the parent company of From Software.
Kadokawa.
And this parent company was hacked by a ransomware gang that is threatening to release internal data. The reason that I wanted to just touch on this for a little bit is that From Software is the group that develops Elden Ring, which is huge right now.
Oh, so this hits a little close to home to you.
I'm not personally a big Elden Ring fan. I'm not like a big Elden Ring player, but I do know people that are. And I know that like every time I go to like Game Rant, Game Informer, whatever, over the past few weeks, it's kind of starting to piss me off. Half the articles are about Elden Ring, Shadow Tree one. And it's, I think, or Shadow of the Erdtree or something like that.
I'm going to look up how many Elden Ring players or subscribers
it's
are.
Probably, eight.
How many?
8 billion.
Elden Ring.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, while he's doing that, so this is a multinational media conglomerate, and one of their holdings is From Software, but also the Anime News Network, so that's a pretty big company, too.
23 million.
Oh, okay. So not quite the
Elden Ring sales have surpassed 23 million copies.
Okay.
So 25 million unique players.
I'm in the minority. It's definitely a very popular game. But the one that's out right now is a specific Elden Ring, something Shadow Tree, Erd Tree, something like that. I'm going to get crucified in the comments for not knowing the name. That's fine. You can correct me.
How dare you, madam?
You have an opportunity to correct me. Please do it. So it's a the popular Japanese video sharing site, Nico Nico, was the hardest hit by the cyber attack. All services suspended. Did not acknowledge From Software, so they're not quite sure how heavily From Software was impacted yet, but this parent company was hit pretty hard. And the ransomware group that perpetrated the hack, of course, they posted a message. We have confidential information. We have it, and we're going to leak it. So, I mean, as such is the nature of ransomware groups, they're demanding a ransom.
Yeah. Step one, deny.
Step one, deny. And when I looked at this, when I went to the Kadokawa group and like looked at their list of holdings on Wikipedia, I think I may be pronouncing that wrong. But they've got quite a bit. I mean, if you look at this list, publication, films and visuals, various others, group media. So they have quite a bit of names to their name, I guess. So this is no small potatoes. It's a pretty big group, obviously based out of Japan. So it'd be interesting to see how far forward this goes. IGN reached out to Bandai Namco and the Kadokawa group and didn't receive any comment back. So that's not really a surprise, though.
I don't know why, but my mind just went, I wonder how long before my ransomware groups start offering chatbots.
to
once you
them.
Land on the page, do you need help giving us Bitcoin? Have you been ransomware? Please enter your identification.
They're
going
to have their own AI.
Yeah.
ransomware AI. Like the little Rufus bot that pops up on Amazon. Like, let me help you. I'm like, no.
I need
go
the ransomware
away.
Version of Clippy.
You're gonna
or whatever.
People are gonna start getting mad at the ransomware groups, not because they stole their information, but because you try to talk to a person and they just keep redirecting.
I'm just trying to pay my ransom. And I keep getting redirected. If I gotta hear that hold music one more time,
the customer service is just downhill. For this ransomware group. Thank you for making light. Two things I really don't like: these new AI bots and ransomware groups. So I wanted to touch on that really quick, just because it is a pretty large company, significant cyber attack. We'll see what.
If you're an Elden Ring player, I'll be looking forward to that email from from Software.
I got an email. It's not a gaming thing, but I think a lot of apartment buildings do this now. They have like some kind of a rental reward service that, like, if you pay your rent on time, you get reward points and you can redeem it for stuff. You get like 2 points per rental, and like it takes a while to accumulate points. But anyway, I got an email. It was like,
they used to reward you with letting you continue to live there.
Yeah. I'm like, what's the point of doing it if, like, what am I gonna? Oh, I get a dollar off a burger in 6 months.
Yeah.
Anyway, regardless, I got an email
Listen,
that said
everything counts now.
That's true. I got an email that said, "Hey, so we don't think that you were affected. We don't think any of our customers were affected, but our parent company got it. It's not Kadokawa. It's a different group, but they had a cybersecurity incident and da da da. And that's the first time that I have had a service other than when I was using LastPass all those many months ago, and I've since redeemed myself and reformed. But this is the first time I've had like an actual service that I use and gotten the email that's like third party cybersecurity incident, and I like tensed up. I'm like, oh no. So false alarm. But anyway, just reminded me of that. We'll move on though.
You're having nightmares.
I do.
The flood of memories coming back.
I have night terrors. That's why I have to drink Celsius when I come in the morning, because I lose sleep. This next article comes to us from Security Week. Millions of OpenSSH servers potentially vulnerable to remote regression attack.
Regression.
Yeah. Like
this
Sean Connery.
This is a big deal.
It sounds like it.
This is a big deal. Probably one of the bigger stories this week. Probably one of the bigger stories this month, if not this year.
Okay.
Just because of how many possible vulnerable clients there are. Millions. Millions. Now, I believe that a fix has been made available, if I'm not mistaken. And
we'll find out.
There are certain, if you're a, is it Glibc that that is the specific... What was it? It says the flaw tracked as CVE-2024-6387, named regression, was discovered by the threat research unit at cybersecurity units from Qualys. Qualys, obviously a very well-known, well-respected security firm. It has been described as critical and serious as the Log4Shell vulnerability of 2021, which was massive. All right. So they said it's unclear if exploitation affects Windows and Mac OS systems, but if you're running Linux, and it is Glibc-based Linux systems, are specifically affected. Unauthenticated remote code execution. See, that you want to talk about nightmares.
Yeah.
Keeping you up.
Talking about pop.
This is what makes your admins break out into flop sweat and go, oh, sorry, what's happening? Somebody call someone. Right? Because you are completely hosed at this point. You have to shut off SSH at that point, or heavily firewall it.
Yeah.
And until the fix is available. Again, I don't remember if they did say that a fix was available.
It doesn't look like it. It says it's a regression of a previously patched vulnerability.
Yes, they reopened a vulnerability that had already been plugged from like 2006.
It says it was recently removed by accident, and organizations that can't immediately upgrade can apply patches that will be released shortly. So there are going to be patches, but they haven't been released yet, it looks
okay,
like.
Okay, so they're working on the patches as we... as we speak. Now, this article came out a couple of days ago.
Oh, so you think maybe
it's possible that there's a fix available at this point.
Let's see.
But how many of you out there use SSH on a Linux system? They say that there's about 14 million possible.
Let's see.
Yeah, here we go. According to Qualys, searches conducted using Shodan and Census services show that more than 14 million potentially vulnerable OpenSSH instances that are directly accessible from the internet. That is why the flop sweat, showing roughly 700,000 internet exposed systems that appear to be vulnerable at this point in time. Man, this is just not good.
So, okay, as of, this was just, I found a different article. It was just updated today, July 3rd, as we're recording this. OpenSSH maintainers have patched a critical vulnerability. So they have patched it as of today.
So patch now.
Yeah.
Patch now.
It's true.
I don't care what you're doing. Stop and patch now if this is the first you're hearing of this.
That's going to be our newest segment. Patch now.
Patch now.
Patchnow.com. If you call now, you can get a free one.
That's right. Talk to our AI chatbot. Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up because, that does seem like, given how heavily and like the widespreadedness.
Listen, we love to contribute to the English language, every Technado.
Given how widespread the impact probably would be. I'm glad you brought that up. That is important. Patch now.
Indeed.
I picked several articles this week that I just, it's fueling my anger. I did it to myself, you know?
The Angry Sophia episode.
Angry Sophia. But I'm not talking about Apple Intelligence anymore, so that's
like
a plus.
Curmudgeon.
That is a plus. But we are still talking about Apple. Apple says no to PC emulators on iOS. You might have, if you're into like emulators at all, they did recently decide to allow retro game console emulators on the App Store. And previously that was not allowed, but it's allowed now. PC emulators, though, are a different story. If it's not a retro game console, you cannot have an emulator. You're not allowed to create an emulator for it, or they're not going to accept it on the App Store, basically.
Why?
Good question. And it got me thinking about what is going to count as a retro game console, because what if it's like, I think the very first like widespread computer game was Space War, and that was years and years and years and years ago. It's definitely older than 20 years, making it retro, okay? But that was on a computer, right? So what if it's an emulator that is for games that were originally designed for like an old PC? Like, at what point do you allow, where do you draw the line, basically? Right now it's retro game consoles, which technically speaking would be any game console that's older than 20 years, which includes games like consoles technically, like the Xbox. That is older than 20 years old. The first couple iterations of the PlayStation are retro game consoles by definition now. I know it's weird. I know Daniel's crying, but it is technically retro now.
What was interesting was, old. Is, you know, so for retro game emulation, that was a big fat no-no on iOS for forever, up until very recently.
Yeah.
And I kind of got to, you know, thumb my nose at anybody that was into retro gaming, but yet ran an iPhone or something. I was like, oh, here I am on my Android going crazy, having a great old time. Sorry, it sucks to be you. Right? And then Apple removed that ban. And there was a couple emulators that popped up in the App Store. And I was like, cool, well, welcome to the club.
Right, yeah.
Enjoy. It's going to be a lot of fun, right? Yeah. Now you can enjoy that as well. And then they come out with, it's like, it just seems very arbitrary. And I don't see any, and the person that they were,
somebody submitted and they got rejected. Their emulator got rejected.
Yeah, they said, in short, as the sole rulemaker and enforcer in the iOS ecosystem, they, being Apple, don't need to be consistent at all. And they basically said that.
They basically said,
what's the problem? Yeah. They said, oh, we can't tell you, but we know it when we see it.
There's no answer as to what counts as a retro game console. So,
yeah, here it is. It's still the same old unreasonable answer along the line of, we know it when we see it.
even though there are retro Windows games and things like that. Yeah. So technically, I guess a PC is not a console is the argument. But at what point, there's just as many PC gamers as there are console gamers. So
they said, when I asked what changes I should make to be compliant, they had no idea, nor when I asked what a retro game console is, they said it's still the same old unreasonable answer. We'll know it when we see it.
Yeah.
Interesting. That is crazy.
And of course, they didn't reply to a request for comment. I'm not surprised, right?
Big tech giving you ambiguous and hard to follow rules. That's unheard of.
Yeah, it's like what we said a few weeks. Like, if you think that Apple wakes up every morning and wants
why is YouTube giving me a copyright strike or hitting me with a hard strike? I don't know, and neither do they.
They're not here to.
They
put
just
a smile
decided
on your
to
face.
Do it.
They're here to just ruin your life. They're here to cause you.
What
problems.
Am I doing wrong? Just tell me, and I'll stop. Mm. You're doing it wrong now. Yeah. So you say.
So the person that wrote this article, his name's Jay Peters. He writes for The Verge. I want to give credit where credit's due. His opinion here at the end is that Apple likely opened the door to retro game emulators in the first place because of antitrust scrutiny. So I wonder if people keep pushing and saying, like, this isn't fair. I wonder if eventually, because there was a time when it was like, no game emulators on the App Store. It's not allowed. And that's obviously changed now. So who knows? Maybe we'll end up going in a different direction. And I don't personally associate Apple products with gaming anyway, as far as like, when I think of I'm sitting down and put my headset on, I'm gaming. I'm not doing that on like a Mac. You know, I'm not doing it on an iPhone. Me personally.
Yeah.
Android users maybe is different because like you said, you guys have been on that train for a while. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe there'll be a bigger market for this in the future. But yeah, it just kind of, I saw that. I was like,
well, Mac has really good hardware. Mm-hmm. So it seems reasonable that a lot of people would want to do emulation on a Mac system because of the horsepower that they have. Running some of the different emulators is very difficult.
Yeah.
3DS is very difficult to emulate 3DS games. You would think this is a little stupid handheld. How hard could it be? But honestly, like even PS2 and PS3, all much, much older gaming systems take some real hardware to emulate all what was going on inside of those actual hardware systems.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can see wanting, if you have a new MacBook or something or a new iPhone, man, it's got great specs. Why wouldn't I want to?
That's a good point. Yeah. I guess it's just not something I've ever personally thought. That's not what I associate with, but probably because historically things like emulators and stuff haven't really been allowed on products like that. So maybe my context will change going forward. But Apple's been pissing me off for the past month. Like every week we got a new story on Apple that I'm like, making me angry. So
are you mad enough is the question.
Like you're going to start an uprising?
Yeah.
Like you're not angry enough?
Can we get Sophia to jump?
You want me to break?
To Android.
I don't know.
See, all of a sudden.
This is pretty new.
She starts hitting the old.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe give me a few years because this is still, I just bought this last year. So I'm not going to.
Listen, many different organizations will gladly take that in trade.
Yeah. I don't know. I have an emotional attachment to it now. It's like I've been using an iPhone for so long.
And I'm guessing all your family is on Apple.
Yeah. My older brother switches back and
forth. That's how they get you.
He's kind of an early adopter for some of that stuff where he'll be like, there's new Galaxy, whatever out. I want to try it. And then new iPhone's out. He'll probably get the new iPhone when it comes out to try it.
Yeah. So honestly, for me, the Apple hardware is amazing. Mm-hmm. I've always said that. You cannot deny that they have great hardware.
Sure.
I usually find fault in the software application, in the operating system itself. It for me is not intuitive at all. I'm like, where the hell is the back button? What is this? Why can't I not go to the previous screen that I was just on? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Do they have a back button yet? Does that exist?
No, I think on the iPhone, it's if you're trying to get back to the app you were just
no,
in.
No. I want to go. I'm going to be in the app and back up from something I clicked through to go to the next thing.
I think it depends on the app. Like if you're
That's what I'm saying. On my Android phone, every app does that.
Yeah.
Because it's the phone that does it for you.
Okay.
The phone goes, oh, I have a back button.
Like hitting the back button on a web page.
Correct.
Okay. I see.
Can be in an app and go back.
Yeah. You're right. In Apple, I think it's contingent on the app. I think
you just
depends.
Have to close the app and then go back in.
Yeah. Depending on what you're using. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Then we're both pissed at Apple.
Frustrating.
That's one thing we can agree on.
Yeah.
Apple makes
us
angry.
It doesn't make sense in how like, I'm like, what is this doing?
Yeah, that's fair. It's not super intuitive.
No, not for me anyway.
To somebody that's familiar with computers and is used to using
people that are 80, they love it.
Yeah. It's maybe more intuitive to people that aren't super computer savvy.
Correct.
But if you're used to using a standard computer, then yeah.
It's just a monkey in you.
It's backwards. Yeah. I agree. A lot of the Mac system. Controls are backwards to me. I don't like them, but I could rant about that all day long.
And that is purposeful.
That it's backwards
to me?
They
did that specifically, yes.
Like, oh, you go left and right? Well, I'm going to go up and down.
It's exactly what happened.
Just to spite you.
That's exactly what happened. Mm. We are not Windows because Jobs was pissed at Gates. And...
They both have nouns for their last names. They need to quiet down.
Yeah.
You can't have a last name that's a noun and be talking that loud. We got one more article that we want to get through.
Yeah.
We do. And you, I think you
I did
handpicked
this
one from the depths. So Portswigger, the company behind the Burp suite of security testing tools, swallows $112 million. And I get an image of Kirby in my head when I see that,
Kirby.
Like swallowing that. Yeah.
In his dreamland.
Exactly. Yes. Playing golf in his dreamland. So the company is named Portswigger. I didn't realize that this was the company behind Burp Suite because I know you use
Burp Suite is the product.
A decent amount.
Portswigger is the company.
Okay. I didn't know that. What does it mean they swallow $112 million?
That's just a play on words because Portswigger, somebody that swigs.
They're being funny.
It's a word game.
Okay. I'm not astute enough for that.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the story here? So
Portswigger company, they are a for-profit company. Way back when they began, though, it was just a dude or two making a product, a useful piece of software called Burp. Burp Suite. Then it became known as Burp Suite. And now it is the gold standard for doing web application security in a lot of ways, right? It is by far the most used. Now there's competition too. There's a Wasm Zap free open source. There's, I think it's called Caldera. All right. What is the name of that system? There's another one that's like new. What is the name of that thing? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. They do have some competition out there, but they are a for-profit system. Am I right on that?
When I look up Caldera, it says it's a cybersecurity framework developed by Mitre. So maybe
that doesn't really explain what it is, though.
Yeah, that's true. Right? It empowers cyber practitioners to save time, money, and energy.
Yeah, I wish I could remember the name of that thing.
I'll do some research. I'll see if I can find it.
But anyway, they are now taking investment funding to the tune of $112 million. Fun fact, I saw this article yesterday or the day before, and I was on LinkedIn, and somebody I follow, Tim Tomes, shout outs, the guy who created ReconNG, phenomenal hacker, creating great tools out there, free and open source for us to all use and enjoy. He made a post about this and how he was cautiously optimistic because he's worried about enshittification.
Ah, yes.
Right? And he said, this is a real term. Go look it up, which it is. It's a real term where you have an online service that is amazing and people love it. And it really caters to the needs of the user. And then they get acquired or they take funding. And from there, they start working on trying to focus more on business and getting business customers instead of, consumers.
So a little more B2B instead of B2C.
Nailed it.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
They start focusing more on B2B than they do B2C. And then because of that, they start changing the way the thing works and how it operates to cater more to that B2B market.
Sure.
And kind of alienating their B2C market.
Because the B2B is where the big money is.
Correct. Because that's where the big money is. Once they've alienated their B2C market, they now start going just for profit grab. And they now alienate their B2B market, making just a really crappy.
Yeah.
Because they're just going for profits. Because that's what investors are looking for, to make profit. They're not necessarily... Do they care whether or not your product is something that people like and enjoy? They just want to make money off of it.
Okay.
So Tim makes this comment and I say, I kind of agree with you. I'm cautiously optimistic. Hopefully the investors are not going to throw their weight around on how the money is used to better the product that is Burp Suite.
Okay.
I can never remember how to pronounce his first name, but he goes by Diff, I think.
Daff, yeah.
Daff. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He commented on that thread in LinkedIn and says, we have no plans for any enshittification.
Oh, well, that's
of
good.
Perp Switcher. I'm glad they don't
plan on it. Yeah.
I don't think that's typically how it works. I think nobody has plans of enshittificating.
It's funny if he logged on, he was like, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's only a matter of time before we start alienating you. Like they have a whole roadmap.
But there is a lot of companies that this does ring true.
Yeah.
And hopefully we do not see that with Burp Suite.
So the concern here is that they've never taken a big outside investment like this, and this is the first time that that Port Swigger is doing this, and there's a concern that it might be a slippery slope.
Correct.
Okay.
Where the product, because it's used by a lot of individuals, right? A lot of individual security researchers pay for this either because they're hobbyists or they're bug bounty hunters. So because it's reasonably priced, this is an amazing tool that runs like $400. That is within the realm of somebody out there, just Joe Schmo, Jane Schmo, doing their thing, being a security researcher. That's not absurd amounts of money. If all of a sudden they start focusing on B2B, is the licensing fee going to go up? Yeah, there's Burp Suite community, but it's highly hamstringed.
Yeah.
As far as performance is concerned and what you can and cannot do with it. Will that even go away? Will they have to focus there? You know, how is this going to look? I can't wait to see their roadmap on what they plan to do with that investment money and how it's going to better the product for everyone, not just B2C or B2B, but for everyone that uses it, because it is such a diverse market. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed that it goes in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it doesn't become a case of, like you said, incentivization. It would be unfortunate. I understand that it's trying to keep up with the, you know, it's constantly growing and evolving. We want to keep up with the market, but at what cost? Right. So.
Yeah. The question is like, what was the impetus for taking that level of money or any money at all?
It's kind of vague.
Like, what do you want to do to grow the product?
There's no specific
goal. Make it better.
It was just.
Well, at least it hasn't been.
Yet. No specific goal stated yet outwardly. Yeah. Just the market's getting bigger. Our customers' needs are getting bigger, which is, you know, probably true, but a little vague.
We need more developers to work on Burp Suite, especially the pro version, to make it to continue to corner the market.
Yeah.
On doing web application security testing.
Yeah. Show me your budget.
Yeah.
I want to see what you're going to put that money towards. Well, hopefully it doesn't go that way, right? I mean, if you are pessimistic, then you'll either be right or pleasantly surprised. But hopefully it doesn't go in the direction of shitification, which is fun to say. But thank you for bringing that up, because, you know, that is a pretty big deal. And good for them for getting as far as they have and being able to get to this level. And hopefully they do the right thing with it. But I think that's going to do it for our articles that we had this week. I know we've got obviously the holiday coming up, and then next week, because usually we do the first Thursday of the month is our All Things Cyber show, but because the first Thursday of the month is a holiday and we will not be here, it's going to be next Thursday on July 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern time, All Things Cybersecurity with Pat Gorman, or InfoSec Pat, as you may know him.
Do enjoy. He's gonna be InfoSec on. Pat.
It's going to be good dude. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a fun time. So that'll be right here in this studio next week, Thursday, 2 p.m. You don't want to miss it. And of course, there'll be a new episode of Technado out that day as well. So you might as well just come to the channel and then hang out all day at that point. I mean, you can also subscribe to never miss an episode of Technado in the future. If you haven't subscribed already, drop a like. If you enjoyed this episode, we hope that you did. Thank you for letting us jabber on about the things that make us angry.
I'm trying to look
up. Are you doing some research?
I'm looking up what that,
the Caldera thing?
Is it Caldera? I don't.
When you said Caldera, the only thing I found was from MITRE, and it said Caldera can be used to test endpoint security solutions and assess a network security posture against common post-compromise techniques in the MITRE attack model. I don't know if that sounds like what you were looking for, but that's the only Caldera thing.
I know that, like, I think John Hammond recently did a video on this specific product.
Ooh, okay.
So I was just for my own personal edification.
Yeah.
It's
edification as
it's
opposed
interesting.
To
yeah, it's an interesting tool. It's just killing me.
And would there be any keywords like of what it does that would
we're about to find it. I know this was such a recent video that I should be able to find it
relatively
quickly.
I wonder if we'll have John Hammond back on the show soon, because we've had him
we always have John on from
we've had him on a couple of times, and that's always fun too. He's we saw him at a conference and my mom was there with us and she recognized him. She was like, I know him. I saw him on your show. She was so excited.
That's funny.
She probably will recognize Pat too, I would imagine, because he was there as well.
Yeah, he was there.
It's always neat to see everybody like in the same place at those conferences where it's like, I've only seen you on a screen and now I get to see you in person. Do you have any luck?
It's going to take me a minute.
Okay. So maybe we'll have an update for you next week then, if Daniel can find any information on that. But until then, thank you for joining us for this episode. Again, if you do celebrate the 4th, hope you have a great holiday. Try not to lose any fingers. And
yeah, someone said posted, somebody doesn't know that this is their last year with 10 fingers.
Hopefully. Hopefully next week when you come back, you'll have all 10 digits so you can continue to.
So you can continue to cross your fingers that you'll have 10 digits.
Wow. All right. We'll call it there. Thank you, Daniel, for that. For Doc Brown, I'm Grandpa, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Technado.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed today's show, consider subscribing so you'll never miss a new episode.